It's you gotta learn, you gotta know how to talk to people. You gotta be a personable guy. You have to be easily liked, and they have to be comfortable with you, which is, I know, for people who aren't journalists, I know it's counterintuitive, right? To have Klansmen and neo-Nazis be comfortable with you. I know that's in itself an uncomfortable thing that you have to come to terms with, but it is necessary. You know, you have to be able to have a beer with these guys.
In order to understand journalism, we need to understand journalists. Each week, we'll hear their side of the story. I'm Nick Chacone, and this is In the Field.
I guess it came later in my life. I mean, my father was always, he was kind of a hobbyist photographer. He did a lot of slide photography and underwater stuff because he used to do scuba diving and things like that. So
This
photography, I
is
guess, was
Johnny
always
Milano.
a constant.
He's a 27-year-old freelance photojournalist based out of Long Island, whose work has been featured in The New Republic, The New York Times, Newsday, Huffington Post, and other news outlets.
So photography, I guess, was always a constant in my life, but I wouldn't say it was an active constant. It never really kind of surfaced for me until probably college. I became very interested in politics and international relations and things like that. And towards the end of my junior year, I had still yet to declare a major. I didn't have a major yet. And I was taking a photography class, and the combination between the sudden rise in my interest in photography and then my political studies, and then at the same time, while I was in the dark room, I'm watching, the Arab Spring in Tunisia and Egypt. I'm like live streaming it in the dark room. So then after a while, it just came to my mind that I should just combine my interest in politics and my love for photography, and then that was kind of it. It kind of just went on from there.
Johnny has an unconventional hobby. He gains access to white supremacist groups and documents their activities through photography. His photos are intimate, and some of them even have a dark humor to them.
And it'll always be one of my favorites. There's, a guy standing in a pool, like up to his knees, with his swastika shirt on, and his buddy's like diving into the pool where it says no diving. And I just, for me, that's like, there's like an absurd humor in that. And the guy's like standing with his hands in his pockets, and I like that to me is like absurdly, chaotically humorous.
He started the project as part of a one-year certificate program in photojournalism at the International Center of Photography in New York City back in 2012. He was initially guided by an interest in politics. He earned a bachelor's degree in political science from St. Joseph's College in Patchogue, New York, before pursuing his photography credential. Now, this was years before white nationalism, the KKK, and neo-Nazis became a mainstream media hot topic, and before the 2016 presidential campaigns. While pursuing his political science degree, he noticed a shift happening in the rhetoric of prominent party figures.
So the Tea Party movement just kind of sprung up, and what we call the alt-right has gained traction, the militia movements and patriot movements and things like that. So the political spectrum became much more shifted in kind of where it was located. And I paid attention to it just because, of my background, I guess, and my interest, where my interests lied. Mainly like international politics, foreign relations, just domestic politics, anything kind of politically motivated or, socially grassroots in political nature has always been an interest of mine. And photography and photojournalism specifically, and documentary work, has always been, a powerful kind of conduit for those kind of experiences for across the world.
So he's nurturing this interest in photography and politics simultaneously, and ideas about this photojournalism project started to coalesce. But it's not like you can just call up your local KKK chapter and set up a photo shoot for a school project. So he started a little bit smaller, by photographing a group he already had full access to.
I started photographing my family since I was living with them, and it's a very like quirky experience photographing my family, which is just because of how different than I am from the rest of my family. My parents were all in the medical field. My sister has a business degree. They wanted me to be a lawyer. It was just a very different dynamic. You know, we have very, I don't want to say few, but there's not many shared interests. So I went into photographing my family as if I was trying to gain access, as just like a general, as like a stranger. And it just really kind of blew open that whole world for me. Like, just this was the way for me to understand things that I might not have understood previously. And I was like, my family's really fucking weird. I live at home. So my parents live on the water, and my whole house is like nautical themed. So we have like, there's like one wall in my living room that's just like filled with like ceramic fish, and like there's like crab nets, and it's just a really weird, quirky house. And the relationship between each of my family members is also really weird and quirky, but I didn't realize that until I started photographing. So it was just a really, for me, it was a really powerful experience to really actually see how photography can actually teach me, and actually how I learn. So I learned more about my family through photographing them than if I wasn't able to. I was able to kind of analyze the dynamic between my father and me, or my mother and me, or my mother and my sister. And it was just kind of a really kind of speculative, and it allowed me to observe a lot more independently and analytically. It's trendy now, but I started looking to like alt-right groups that were gaining a lot of popularity and a lot of stature in kind of public discourse. So like the Tea Party was getting a lot of, you know, a lot of support from a lot of people. Even here on Long Island, there's a good amount of them. And then like the constitutionalists, and you know, it became very, very conservative in nature. And so I think just through my research of kind of those particular movements, I found that groups like the KKK and other neo-Nazi groups and things like that were getting a lot, they were getting a platform. They were finding people that were listening to them. And I found that the numbers were increasing and the groups were increasing. And it was a new time for like the Klan. So the Klan, you know, Facebook is now like integral to like their organizational efforts, which was like a new development for me. And I did not expect that at all. And it's just, it's a different time for them now than it, even when I started it. It's a different Klan now than it was when I started it, for sure.
Johnny started with the internet, doing research and reading forums and trying to make connections. He said he never misrepresented himself, but started to have luck by emphasizing that he was a photography student. The National Socialist Movement, or Neo-Nazi Party, is an import to the US from Germany. And unlike the Ku Klux Klan, it isn't a religious movement. Neo-Nazi organizations tend to be more politically and militarily organized, in Johnny's experience.
And some of them are actually pretty intelligent. They have college education, white collar jobs, blue collar jobs. Doesn't really matter. People working for BMW. That's the other thing. Professions. There's no real single profession. Cops, sheriffs, deputies.
The KKK originated in the U.S. and is much more of a familial and religious institution. You're born into the KKK, whereas you're likely to have been recruited in the neo-Nazi party. Also, as it happens, Klan members don't like neo-Nazis very much.
They view National Socialism as a threat. It's not, you know, their argument is, you know, our forefathers fought them in the war. Why would we want to kind of institutionalize that here in the States?
Johnny says there's also a lot of infighting in both neo-Nazis and Klan chapters across the nation.
A lot of them that run their own clans are egoists, so everybody wants to run the KKK. So they're all splintered up because they all run their clan differently. So there's some infighting between groups, and then there's, you know, well, why should we unite under your leadership kind of things? So I can be the leader.
In getting the project started, he managed to set up an interview with a neo-Nazi general for the Northeast region who lived in Brooklyn. The general's name was Duke Schneider, and Johnny observed him to be intelligent and well-spoken. Johnny said he was surprised, though, at some of the seemingly competing attitudes Duke held about others.
He's not like the American History X Nazi, you know what I mean? And a lot of them aren't like that. The concept of illegal immigration came up, and he said something like, you know, if I'm walking along the border and I see a little Mexican kid with his leg blown off, you know, I'll bring him to the hospital. But then once he gets fixed up and everything, I'll bring him back and I say, okay, now it's time for you to go back. So like it's like that kind of, it's like, okay, you're going to bring him to the hospital, okay. But then you're just going to, okay, you got your leg fixed, so go back. There was another instance where he was talking about how if his Jewish neighbors had a fire in their house, and he would pull them out. So it was just kind of a very, but he also didn't believe that the Jewish state was real. Like it didn't, he believed that it didn't deserve to exist, and all this other kind of really odd kind of concepts that really kind of show to, I think, the complexity of the personalities of some of the members. You know, I'm not a sympathizer, but I think that's interesting to just kind of realize that, you know, not everybody's Ed Norton.
Duke Schneider has since left the neo-Nazi party and is now married to a black woman. They still live in Brooklyn, and they were profiled by the New York Times in February.
And then it was a wait and see. Like, I didn't hear from him for a little bit. He said, I'm going to talk to the commander. We're going to see if we can get you out and, you know, have you come along. So I didn't hear from him. They did a background check, and they would also look to see if I was, you know, a criminal. They allow convicts in their organization, but they had very strict policies on like criminal acts occurring within the organization, at least from my understanding, at least what they've told me. People that were, you know, ex-cons were allowed to be a part of the organization, but people that were committing crimes in the name of the organization were not permitted to be in the organization. But so that would be part of the background check that they would run on me as well.
People have criticized Johnny for pursuing this project. They've raised concerns that through his photography, he could be humanizing people who dehumanize others. He's been accused of being too sympathetic, though that concern didn't really occur to him when he started out. To Johnny, he just wanted to see what was going on in other parts of the country, socially, politically, and economically, with his own eyes. He thought of himself as being the photographer of record for these hate groups.
I never really worried about coming off as a sympathizer. That never kind of popped into my head, just because I knew who I was. I had no qualms about what I believed in, and I had, you know. So I did receive that criticism a couple of times from friends also.
Like you're going to make them look like human beings?
Yeah, I got that. And I got that specifically to when I was talking about what we were just talking about, how these people are complex, like they are people, you know. Then they, you know, it's just the dichotomy of what they believe is right doesn't take away from the fact that they're human, which I think is important. I'm always truthful in what I'm doing. Being freelance and actually having it start as a personal project is always helpful, just because in any sense, in any project, not even just this project, like I am the photographer, the producer, and the editor. So I make the edit, it also, honestly, it sounds trivial, but it also helps that I'm not a writer. Like I don't, any of the pictures, anytime my pictures run in an article, like I know what the article is going to be just because of the nature of the subject, of course, but I don't write So the New Republic article was like the hate in the age of Trump, which all well t to begin with is a misleading article because the project started before Trump anyway. But obviously it's become more prominent, but I didn't write the headline, I didn't write any of the article. I just say I had you know I had no I know ha had no hand in the article. Like I just give you badass pictures, and that and they love my pictures, which is also kind of unexpected. So,
You didn't think they would.
well, I didn't really know what to expect.
Johnny's access depends on the group's trust of him. As long as he's transparent with them in what he's seeking to accomplish, he continues to get invited back. But for one other photographer who's been at it longer than he has, Johnny doesn't know any others who are putting in this kind of effort into documenting this segment of the population.
If I come off all rigid and if I was yelling at them, or I was just like, you know what, this is totally wrong. I blah blah blah. They know where I stand. They know I don't believe in their beliefs, but they also appreciate, for better or for worse, they also appreciate that they can have a beer with me, that I can have a beer with them, that I can joke around with them with about other things. Like I can bring something else. They'll talk to me about photography. You know, we'll have conversations about photography. Or, you know, I think it's that kind of way of talking with people that I think goes a long way. Like long form visual journalism for me is always the better option, no matter what story it is. Like I have the time to invest, because this is something that I'm doing on my own. I have the time to invest in, you know, Klan weddings, Klan border, or neo-Nazi border patrol, or, you know, naturalization ceremonies and things like that, because it takes time to gain trust. And that's the two go hand in hand, I think. And I think they're both equally important and integral to the work. They're things that I wasn't able to photograph at my first rally. But now I go wherever I want, and I photograph really whatever I want.
Right.
But the private rallies are, so for the Klan, the private rallies are where the cross lightings are held, the naturalizations are held. They have Bible study groups. They have, you know, meetings, you know, organizational meetings. They go over the Klan handbook, or they'll bring in new members. And those are always private rallies. Those are always done only within the organization, not open to the public. And for the neo-Nazis, they have, it's, like I said, much more structured, so, and very politically and militarily organized. So typically before, like, nationals, their big rally every year, mm-hmm. during Hitler's birthday, April 20th or so, the weekend of, they will have, like, a private banquet, whether it's in the hotel conference lobby, the conference room, or private property or something. Before the night before the rally, they'll have like a private banquet, which is just a dinner. They'll have a dinner for all their members. They'll promote members to different ranks with diplomas, and they'll sell merchandise. They'll have music, sometimes live music, and they'll just kind of intermingle. They'll have speeches made, you know, so it's much more of a intimate atmosphere, I guess, for the organization. My projects in general, maybe like it's specifically like the Klan work, might not always be publishable. It's a way for me to get editors to look at my work, to see how I shoot, how I tell a story, that I'm able to get access to a story, that I'm able to photograph and keep a story going, and that I have the determination and the drive to do a project even when no one assigns me to do a project. You know what I mean? I think that's big for a lot of editors. They want to see that you're able to think creatively on your own and do your own. They want to see the drive that you have to do your own body of work without someone telling you to do this body of work. The next day's work is not always guaranteed. You know, every day could be my last day of work, theoretically.
What is that like? I mean,
it's terrible. It's like there's so much anxiety involved with the industry. It's unfortunate, just because the one thing that you need in terms of job security is really never a guarantee.
Despite the fact that he's long since graduated from his photography program and that he's getting steady freelance assignments from Newsday, the New York Times, and elsewhere, Johnny is still invested in expanding his coverage of these hate groups and trying to understand the forces that allow them to prosper. Like so many journalists, he has ended up in a different place than he started. What began as a school project has turned into the most ambitious and surprising work of his budding professional career.
I feel like I learned as much about a photographer in a photograph that I do about the photograph itself. Always photograph. You have to keep shooting no matter what. Anything. You can start a project, do anything. It could be any project on anything. Just shoot something. Or portraits. Shoot portraits or shoot, you know, vehicles. Do product shots. Anything. You have to be able to photograph something constantly. Because you always want to have an updated body of work to show editors. If you don't have, you know, if you're not staffed somewhere, you have to have, you know, they want to see what you're doing recently. Like I said, they want to see that you have the creative capacity to conceptualize, form the specifics of a project, shoot the project to completion, and be able to present the project as a body of work. And that's important for a lot of photographers to remember. They should always be working on something no matter what. Secondly, you need to be able to rough out the hard times, definitely. There's going to be lulls where, you know, like I said, you won't be working. And I think you need to be able to if you're really passionate about photography, you need to be able to find a way to make that work.
Be sure to head over to ITFpodcast.com to subscribe or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. This episode was mixed by yours truly and features music by Rafiki, Teen Girl Fantasy, Brooke Fetisi, and myself.